there is a lot in our Christian lives that the world and our culture pretty much outright rejects. There's a lot of teachings, a lot of morality that God's law prescribes that the world just has a very hard time with. And I think one of those things right now are God's laws on sexuality, morality. If they're even acknowledged by the world, it seems to be just completely thrown out right now, and the world pays very little attention to those laws. And I think another area that we see the world really having a difficult time with, though, is the role of women in our services. And of course, there's very clear teaching about the role of women that we follow, right? Passages like 1 Timothy. In 1 Timothy, we read about it's a letter that Paul is writing to Timothy, and he's writing to Timothy because he's left Timothy in Ephesus, and his job there is to work with the churches that are there. And so the contents of Timothy are really instructions for Timothy as an evangelist, as a worker in that church there. And so part of what he lays out for him in 1 Timothy chapter 2 in verse 12 is, I do not permit a woman to teach or to exercise authority over a man. Rather, she is to remain quiet. Of course, Paul gives a reason, which is nice. We don't always get reasons, but in this case, there's a reason. For Adam was formed first and then Eve. And Adam was not deceived, but the woman was deceived and became a transgressor. So passages like this, I feel, are just very hard for our current culture really to swallow. And I think there's a good reason for that. Our history right now is full of the last centuries or even millennia of women being marginalized, of women being exploited and abused. And their role and place in society has definitely not been respected as it should have. And that has led our culture to finally wake up and realize that that's not a good treatment. And certainly this verse does not allow for such a treatment of women. But it makes it a hard pill for our culture really to swallow. And so I think that whenever we look at these verses and we try to explain and understand them, that it really behooves us to consider the full context to make sure that we are really transmitting what the passage really intends to say. Of course, this passage is very clear, but another such passage that frequently comes out is in Ephesians, the 5th chapter. This is a favorite chapter of mine, and often we hear Ephesians 5 and verse 22 quoted quite a bit, especially perhaps at weddings. Of course, there's a very beautiful part here we're going to read in a minute comparing the relationship to Christ and the church. But it begins in Ephesians 5:22, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. And there we have it again, the husband's favorite verse, right? See, honey, it says right there, Ephesians 5:22, deal with it, right? And again, this is one of those texts that I think is particularly hard for our culture to digest and understand. It feels antiquated. It's not part of the woke or Me Too kind of movements that we see out there. And yet, the Bible's teaching on it is quite clear. We can make no apology for it. But I feel that, especially in the case of this verse, we can explain it quite a bit better. And so what I'd like to do is talk about this verse in its broader context today and see if we can draw some lessons specifically about submission, but also really to give us ideas of perhaps how we can better represent God's laws to the people, because it's important that we reflect the true meaning of the scriptures back to the world around us. So first of all, it says, wives, submit to your own husbands as to the Lord. And so we have this really nasty word, submit, right? Which comes from submission. The other word that you'll read a lot of times in passages like this, like in Corinthians, is subjection. And I would say there are two different words there, right? Subjection and submission, definitely both related. But subjection, you can kind of see the word subject in there, which kind of, at least in my mind, makes me think of medieval times, right? When you had like a real king and he had his subjects. It never really occurred to me that calling people subjects is a subtle reminder that you are over them, right? And that they are under you. Of course, we don't call us that today, but we're still subject, right? Today we think of ourselves as citizens, right? But you too are subject. You're subject to a federal government, state, local laws, and many, many other forms of authority, depending on, you know, your personal lives and positions. But the word that's used here isn't subjection, it is submission. And I think outside of biblical context, probably you don't use the word submission very much at all. Maybe if you wrestle, right? There's a series of moves called submission holds, where the whole point is to get your opponent in some kind of position where you can inflict massive damage on them and they can do nothing to stop you, and you know, you have to tap out, right? And essentially you have to give a signal that says you yield, because there's nothing that you can do. So you are yielding up your authority, and that's really what submission means, to yield your will to another person. And so that's the word that's used here. And that's the first thing that I want to point out, that they're different, subtly different, but different. One is to yield to an authority because you are under that authority, and the other is just to yield, period. The other thing I'd like to point out about submission is that really this verse, 5:22, doesn't really start here, as in many passages. It really starts from the passage that connects to it. Of course, this is the Ephesian letter that Paul writes. He's writing and giving to the Ephesian people a long list of things that they are to do. If you kind of glance back up, of course, we're pulling even this out of context. In verse 15, he tells them to be careful how you walk, walk wisely. Verse 16, make the most of the time, each other in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs instead, right? Verse 20, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. So did you catch that? The instruction is to submit to one another. And the commandment is to all of us. We are all supposed to submit to one another. And I would say that submission is just something that is very difficult for us. Yielding is something that is very difficult for us. I say us, let me just say me. I realize that I am really hardwired to go against the notion of submission. And maybe you can relate. I can share with you some more embarrassing stories, not in public. But a few that I'll tell you, the ones that kind of stand out in my mind is that when we were living in Arabia, there were guards posted at all the buildings. And their job was, of course, to check your badge. We had to wear a badge everywhere we went and make sure, you know, that you're allowed to be there, which is ridiculous because the whole compound was behind a wall and you couldn't get on the compound unless you were allowed to be there. But nonetheless, those security guards were there. And I just despise it. It sounds very funny right now just to talk about it. But I despise it because half the time they were sleeping, and maybe another half the time they weren't there. And so then the occasional times that they were there, then they would interrupt your conversations as you were talking with your colleagues going in and out of buildings and stop you and accost you and insist on seeing your ID. And I had a very hard time. I'm embarrassed to say I had a very hard time swallowing that, because it was ridiculous to me, right? We have a hard time submitting when we don't view the subject to be worthy of it. It's very, very hard to yield in that case. And of course, it caused me a lot of pain and suffering, and I'd like to tell you it's gone away, but it hasn't. The lab, I'm sure you'll be very surprised to learn, is full of bureaucracy that I continually have to bow to. And even though I resist it, even though I feel that it's really silly, I find myself a lot of times eventually having to just bow a knee to that and yield. We do not like to yield. And maybe it's because we're so used to not yielding. Our culture has really, really engendered this sense of follow your dreams, and it really doesn't mesh very well with this notion of yielding. And yet, the instruction that we read here is that we are to yield, to submit to each other. What you'll notice here, and what I'd like to suggest to you, is what remains of chapter 5 and some of chapter 6 are special cases of how that submission looks like in different relationships. And so you have the very familiar and well-worn 5:22, wives, submit to your own husbands. But then it turns around in 25, husbands, love your wives. We'll talk about it in some more detail, but I would suggest to you that this is the other side of the submission coin. When you find yourself in the position of authority, what does submission look like? In chapter 6, we see children obey your parents in the Lord. In 6:4, fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. Again, both sides of that relationship. But I believe that it's really showing us what submission looks like in each case. Verse 5, slaves, obey your earthly masters. And verse 9, masters, do the same and stop your threatening. So that's what I want to kind of look at and really try to cast this passage more in a specialization of the concept, which is we are to submit to each other. So let's do that and go back and look a little more closely at what we read about in 5:22. Again, it reads, wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as Christ is the head of the church, his body, and is himself its Savior. Now, as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit in everything to their husbands. So this is, I would say, the easier side of the coin to understand in submission. The person who finds themselves in the receiving end of the authoritative position needs to submit to the authority, right? That's the bit that's a little more clear to us, and that's what it reads here. And of course, Paul puts a bar that's very high. He puts the bar that it's to be like the church submits to Christ. But guys, don't get too comfortable, because it's about to get comfortable for us. That's what submission looks like, right? And it's to be like this example of Christ in the church. And just like the church looks to Christ as that guide, that moral directive, women are also, the wives are supposed to look to their husbands in this way. This is the way submission looks like in this particular relationship. But guys, husbands, the bar is very high. Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, that he might sanctify her, having cleansed her by the washing of water with the word, so that he might present the church to himself in splendor, without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, and that she may be holy and without blemish. In the same way, husbands should love their wives as their own bodies. And so the directive is here, it doesn't use the word submit, but brethren, men, if you think that loving your wife like Christ loved the church is not going to involve you yielding your will to your wife, you are doing it wrong, right? And I might need to buy her some flowers and apologize if you're under that assumption. It involves a great deal of yielding. And in fact, he calls out that Christ himself yielded his will to us. We'll read about it a little bit later. He yields his will to the Father, but he does not what he wants to do, right? But he does what's good for all of us, his church. He put that first. To love and to lead like Christ leads the church is to submit our will, to put our will underneath and consider the other person as more important. And he also makes a very interesting comparison here. He starts to talk about that in terms of the woman being your own flesh. He says, in the same way, in verse 28, husbands should also love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. But no one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes and cherishes it just as Christ does the church. It's true. We might go under periods of fasting or diet or do things which seem really harsh to our bodies. But it's not long term, right? Long term, we don't treat our bodies badly. And so in the same way, Paul makes that and says we should not treat our wives in that way. It says, because we are members of his body, verse 31, therefore a man and a father, shall leave his father and mother and hold fast to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh. He goes back and talks about this verse from Genesis, and it's as if to remind you that you are one flesh, right? That's how Genesis describes it. And of course, Paul is going off on a little bit of a tangent here, which is very beautiful and profound. In fact, he says it. This mystery is profound. And I'm saying that it refers to Christ and the church. However, let each one of you love his wife as himself, and let the wife see she respects her husband. He goes off on a bit of a tangent here. And I think the implication is that as our relationship, husband and wife, is like Christ and the church, and we are one flesh, then it also makes us one with Christ. And that is a very profound thought. I believe that's what Paul is commenting on there. But he gets back to the point. The point is that we are to love our wives as ourselves. And that indeed involves a whole lot of yielding, a lot of submission. Not because of a position of authority, but because that's our example and that is how Christ loves us. He goes on. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. How many kids in here have been made to memorize this verse? Maybe I should ask the opposite question. Is there any child in this audience, older or not, who has not memorized this verse? It was maybe the first one I ever memorized, maybe. Right? But, and it's clear. Children should obey their parents. That is the correct, positional authority. But he goes on. Again, that is what submission looks like in a parent-child relationship. But it's not just obedience. He says, honor your father and mother. This is the first commandment with a promise, that it may go well with you and that you may live long in the land. It isn't mere obedience, and I think we all, especially those of us who are older, and maybe even some of the younger ones, can relate to the notion of there's obeying mom and dad, and then there's honoring mom and dad. And those are two different things, right? And the text here says what submission looks like is an honoring of our parents, which means not just a mere obedience out of words, out of the mouth, right? But a true reverence of our parents, which can be quite challenging at times, especially as a child, but kids, even as you grow up, it can be hard sometimes. But don't be hard on your parents. They're doing the best job that they can. And take comfort in the fact that there's an instruction for your parents too. On the flip side of that, what does the flip side of that submission look like in this parent-child relationship? Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. It feels a little bit silly for me to talk to parents about yielding to their kids because, first of all, I have no kids, and second of all, it strikes me that parents are all too well understanding this part, right? Parents yield a lot of their energy, of their time, of their money, of maybe even their own personal ambitions and desires in order to provide for their children. It is a very well-worn path, I think, for a lot of our parents. And it takes time, and I think that the passage really points this out, right? That it takes time and dedication and sacrifice of your will, a yielding of your will, right, to make sure that your child grows up in the instruction of the Lord. And I know that from talking to a lot of you that you spend a great deal of your energies thinking about just that. There's also a bit here that says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger. And if you'll allow me to extend that and make it parents, I believe that's not I don't think that's outside of the concept here. Do not provoke your children to anger. The point, of course, is it's difficult to be in a position of authority. It's very easy to let your rules reign supreme. But the point here is that you're not to do so in such a way that just outright provokes your kids. And of course, kids are going to get upset no matter what you do sometimes. It's not that. But I think maybe we all know those parents who rein in their kids so much and give them such tight rules, and I have known some, that it really exasperates the kids and sets them up for failure. I've known some even in the church. And what happens is that as soon as those kids have some freedom about them, they go crazy and rebel and run off. And I think that it shows us what submission looks like on the other side of the coin. I have to make sure that the laws and the rules that parents lay down are truly in the kids' best interest and not just a whim of what the parents want. Of course, that's very convenient for me to say. I ask your indulgence with me on making that point. He goes on. He goes on to say, slaves, obey your earthly masters. Of course, this isn't a surprise either, right? Slaves, yes, a slave. I mean, that speaking of things which go very much against our modern culture, and I'm very glad it does, this notion of slavery in the Bible, we occasionally get these drops and mentions of slavery, and we have to kind of remember that culturally this was a thing then. It was very commonplace for peoples who were conquered by other peoples then to be their slaves, to be taken in as slaves. Slaves were traded like the commodities, they were property. Even in our own country's history, you know, back before the Civil War. And so Paul writes here under those conditions, and he says, slaves, obey your earthly masters. And I'm sure that there was a lot of abuse of slaves in that time. And yet the mandate, submission, what submission looks like in this case, is an obedience of your earthly masters. But look how much how far he takes it. With fear and trembling, with a sincere heart, as you would Christ, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord, and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is slave or free. And so we get this instruction for slaves that they are to do what they do as to the Lord and with a full heart. But there's also this little drop that this is a law that remains true, not just for slaves, but also for freemen. And so a lot of times we think about this as the employee-employer relationship. I don't think that's, well, first of all, I don't think it does the passage quite justice. I think that it dismisses the power of the relationship that was there. But I do think that there are some things that we can learn. You may feel like a slave in your job, but I think that's an exaggeration. But there are things that we can learn here. The good that we do, we should do it as to the Lord, not as if we're serving whoever we're serving, not if we're, you know, doing your schoolwork, not because your teacher told you to, or doing the work that your boss is giving you, not because your boss has given it to you. No matter how good or bad your teachers are, or good or bad your bosses are, your life is going to be full of people like this. You don't do it for that. You do it as if it's serving God. God does not care about your math homework. God cares about you doing the best job that you can at the task at hand. And he says, according to this passage, that really, that's what submission looks like. It's not just lip service, just doing the thing without a full heart, but doing it wholeheartedly. Of course, there's a flip side to this, and I think this is probably would have been revolutionary at the time. He says, masters, do the same to them. Now, a master had slaves. They were his property. Even in our country's history, slaves were property of their masters. They thought about them like they think about things or livestock. And yet, here, this passage instructs masters to treat their slaves in the same way. And he goes on, stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours in heaven, knowing that he who is both their masters and yours is in heaven, that there is no partiality with him. You may think that there's some kind of positional difference here, but I'm going to tell you that there isn't. And that's what submission looks like from a master-slave relationship. And so I hope that looking at this kind of gives a different light to this whole passage and maybe gives us a way to talk about it. And actually, the principle that it lays down, I mean, the notion really, you know, wives submit to your husbands, may be a hard one for people to swallow. But what the actual teaching is on the whole on submission, I think, is far more difficult, more challenging personally, and goes far beyond, you know, different kinds of policies or different kinds of philosophies of our current trends in society, and goes to the very heart of Christianity, and that is to consider somebody else as more important than yourself. Right? It really isn't that much different than the very basic laws that Christ laid down in the gospel. It's just cast in this kind of frame because of the positions that we find ourselves in society. And the truth is, you will always find yourself over some people in terms of authority and under some people in terms of authority. And it's good to see what submission looks like in all the cases. Going back to the beginning, verse 5:21, it's very difficult for us to submit to people, as we said, when we feel that they don't deserve it. And the point I want to make here towards the end is, You don't do it because they deserve it. The scripture said, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. You don't do it because your husband deserves it. I mean, I hope he does for your sake. You don't do it because your wife deserves it. You don't do it because the kids deserve it. Again, we love our families, and we pray that your family situations are good, and it's very easy to follow these laws. But we don't submit to each other even because they always deserve it. We do it out of reverence for Christ. And I would say that's a very powerful statement when you think about it in its full context. The passage we read quite frequently is in Philippians 2. And it just kind of rolls off the tongue, right? We read about this poetic part here that Paul writes to the Philippian church in 2, verse 6. It says that who, meaning Christ, though he was in the form of God, did not count equality with God a thing to be grasped, but made himself nothing, taking the form of a servant, being born in the likeness of men, and being found in human form, he humbled himself, becoming obedient to the point of death, even death on the cross. This is a picture of Christ starting off in supreme authority and choosing to empty himself and become under the authority. And what did Christ do when he found himself in the form of man? He became obedient. He submitted to that authority. And he submitted to that authority not when it was convenient for him, but to death. It reminds me of the Garden of Gethsemane in Luke, the 22nd chapter. I think a very powerful moment here. We know that after he institutes the Lord's Supper and takes the Passover, that Christ comes to the garden with his followers. It says in verse 41 in the Garden of Gethsemane, it says that he withdrew from them, that is, Christ withdrew from his disciples, about a stone's throw, and knelt down and prayed, saying, Father, if you are willing, remove this cup from me. Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. There's been quite a bit of debate about exactly what is meant by this, but I think it reveals a few things. First of all, it was not Christ's will, and I think it probably is a lot of like what Paul writes in Romans 7. Of course he wants to do God's will, but to go and suffer in this way is not his will. He doesn't want to do it, but he does, but he doesn't. But I feel like there's a real conflict here with Christ. But he himself says, not my will, but your will be done, which identifies that it was his will not to go through with this. I'm sure that Christ wasn't a masochist and wanted to suffer. He says that, right? But he yields. He submits to the will of the Father. And I would suggest to what's good for us as well. We may have been hostile at that time in our minds towards Christ. But what Christ does for us here is puts his will underneath even ours today. By going through the sacrifice that would give us life indeed. And I want to point out to you that God hears this prayer and responds. And part of this that I maybe forgot about or didn't focus on is what happens next. Verse 43, there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him. Why did God send an angel to strengthen Christ if it wasn't hard for him to do so? And a true measure of his submission to the Father and submission to us, not because we're in a place of authority, but because he loves us. And that's what I'd like to leave you with this morning. This notion of submission and yielding is an ugly part of life, but it's there. And it's very clear in the Bible. And there is positional authorities that we just can't get around, and the Bible is very clear about that. But we don't have to leave the public with perhaps this bad taste in our mouth. What's really taught there is that we are all to submit to each other. And it's not because we deserve it, but because that's what Christ did for us. I pray that something in there was helpful for you. It gives you some ideas, improves relationships, helps you talk with the public. That's a lesson that I had to present today. We also take this time to make an invitation to anybody who is not a Christian, become a Christian, or if you are a Christian and need the prayers of the saints, we encourage you to make those needs known now while we stand and sing.